Hello and welcome to The Big Interview on Monocle 24, our one-on-one show where people with fascinating lives, enviable careers and plenty of great tales, some tall, some short, sit down and tell us how they got to where they are today, what inspires them and maybe what makes them tick. My guest today is, well, something of a polymath, a businessman, writer, self-taught cook and restaurateur who's dabbled in art, architecture and design too along the way. Since opening Bill's in Sydney in 1993, Bill Granger now has restaurants all over the world, including Bill's in Japan, South Korea and Hawaii, and his Granger & Co. restaurants here in the UK. Born in Melbourne, the son of a butcher, Bill elected to study architecture. He was always passionate about design and soon brought those critical faculties to food. He's been rustling up simple but delicious, some might say comfort food, ever since. And I'm delighted to say Bill Granger joins me now here at Midori House in London. Bill Granger, welcome to The Big Interview.
Thank you very much.
To have you with us again. I thought I'd start by, well, I don't want to sort of start on a kind of semantic point, but it's interesting that you, I know you've said before that you're a cook, not a chef. Mm. Well, and also you've said that you're quite a lazy cook. I know you've said on a couple of occasions. And this affects everything. You say that your businesses kind of grow organically. There's not a great grand strategy. But you seem to be doing fairly well. Is this all true? Can you sort of accidentally have dozens of restaurants and books and all of these kind of successes? Is it organic as you make out?
I don't think it's accidental. I mean, remember when I had my first job in the food industry? And I worked for a great pub owner in Sydney. And I helped him. I was studying at the time. I was an art student. And I was helping him for a catering job. He had a big catering job. And he said, it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you try your best at it, it'll lead somewhere else. And I think that's the philosophy I have. So, we all get opportunities. So every opportunity I get, I try to make the most of it. Hmm. So whether, the first time I had a book, I just threw everything, was offered a book, I threw everything into it. And that led to another book. And it doesn't always work. But I think that's why I think it's very hard to have big plans sometimes, because it stops you focusing on doing a good job in the moment.
The next thing that's in front of you.
Yeah.
And what about that idea of being a cook, not a chef? Is that still an important distinction?
I don't know if it's so important. I mean, what I do today is it's really out of respect to chefs, because I'm not a trained person. I haven't really come through the professional restaurant industry. So I've never really worked at another restaurant, anyone's. I've worked at a little cafe, only one, before I started my own. So I feel I just don't like to have pretensions that I really know how to cook in a kitchen, that I'm really professional, because I'm not. And that's probably why I say I'm a cook. I see myself as a well-meaning amateur home cook, someone who loves to entertain. I love having people over and like to make people welcome, but food's only part of it. Yeah, because it's about environment and, character and everything.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about that later then, but that sort of leads me to ask you about how it all started then. I mean, was food, I mean, presumably you always had a great love of food, but what was it? Was it always present in your life? Was it one of these things where it was about family and it was about the food that you ate growing up and at home and, dishes that your mum made and all this kind of thing?
Oh, look, my family life around food growing up, my mother was one of the generation, I think, I grew up in the 70s, 70s and 80s. So my mother's generation, she was working and she was definitely rejecting any notion of being stuck in the kitchen all the time and stuck at home. So it was a time of, taking shortcuts. And food wasn't really, I can only remember a few times we sat down as a family and ate together. It really wasn't a big part of our life. But we used to go to restaurants. My parents would take us out on a Friday night to a restaurant, which was quite, it was a time when going out to restaurants was more of an unusual thing. So they definitely loved going out, my parents. And my father had butcher shops. So, food was his business. Not that my father's overly interested in food. Meat for him was very much a product, was his family business. His father had butcher shops and it was very much that old school. You'd be in a baker or a butcher, but you wouldn't necessarily be obsessed about making the best, the bread or, getting the best meat you could. It was running a business, a local business.
Do you think that gives you a better appreciation almost then of the nuts and bolts of cooking? If you're looking at it as raw materials, if meat is something, it was almost functional, I guess, when you were growing up. Do you think that means that you understand it in a different way? It doesn't become a philosophical discussion. It's a bit more pragmatic. Is that helpful?
Yeah, I think that pragmatism around food is very important because, we all have to eat and we all have to eat regularly. So you need to be a little bit less precious about it sometimes is important. I mean, it's definitely, for my business, not being too precious about it because it's every day and people want to go all the time is important. So I tried to keep myself, my own ego and myself out of actually what the customers want and what I should be doing, which I think probably has done me well. It's made me more customer focused rather than, you know, trying to express myself all the time through food.
Do you think that that's, it's interesting, you know, we've already talked about this distinction between cooks and chefs. Is that something that you identify as a potential pitfall then for a very, if you like, chefy chef? Sort of, in effect, telling the public what's good for them.
Yes,
do you shy away from that notion?
Yeah, and I think, you know, chefy chefs are, you know, are breaking the rules, and it's a very much a personal art form. And it's, you know, it's really unchecked creativity, I think, which is fantastic. So, you know, people, you know, at the top restaurants, the top people, you know, whether it's at, you know, Noma or what Heston does, or it's really about a creative expression and people catch up to it. And it's not necessarily giving them what they know they want. It's giving them something they've never even seen before. Whereas what I do is quite different. I think, you know, when you talk about that, that is probably the difference of a cook and a chef. A cook really cooks to make people happy, knowing what they like and anticipating what they like and giving it to them. Whereas I think a finer chef really does something to pushes them and to surprise people.
Now, we mentioned briefly this idea that your path into cooking was maybe slightly alternative. It wasn't, you know, training under another chef, this sort of thing. Did your other learning, did it help with your culinary learning in a sense? You studied architecture, I think, briefly. You went to art school, of course. What was happening in your head? Do you find that you've sort of integrated some of those disciplines into food in a way?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the creative areas are quite related. And I think, you know, if you enjoy the creative world, and that can be creating yourself, it can be working with creative people and helping produce what those creative people do. I think if you enjoy that, and there's a certain, with creative work, there's definitely a less direct path. You know, think you've got to be a bit more organic, a bit more flexible, and a little bit less, focused on a result. You've got to allow that creative process to happen. So I think my background, with school, I wasn't bad at school, but I was never wildly academic, where I felt it was obvious to go into an academic, you know, career. So for a while, I thought architecture was going to be it, and I really worked hard because I loved, you know, interiors and buildings. I thought that was a good place for me. You know, although my parents were reminding me when I was younger, I wanted to do hotel management. So I think the food thing was always there, that idea of hospitality. And then I changed to art school because I found that a little bit structured and a little bit definite. And I think at 19, it's really hard to know what you want to do. Mm. I mean, I don't think anyone does. And so art school gave me the time just to be, really, and to not have a direct thing I had to do apart from, you know, creating different artworks or learning different techniques, which had nothing to do with what I wanted to do in the end. But it just gave me time to think. And I think the great thing about art school is it teaches you and gives you time to think, which I think the education system doesn't necessarily always do.
We've got to talk about the UK. You're in London now. You live in London.
Yeah, I live in,
family,
based in London.
Your family are here. Are your kids, for example, are they little Londoners? And if they are, how do you feel about that?
They're global. I think the world now, there's a whole lot of us that are working globally. And I think, you know, a lot of it's to do with technology, that it's easy to, you know, with Skype, where you see people, where, you know, conference calls used to be really hard with video. Now it's an everyday thing. Emails come through. So it's a very normal thing working around the world for us now. And I think you become better at it. I think you become better at understanding and appreciating the differences of every country at first. I think as time goes on, relationships internationally become easier as you get to know each other on a deeper level. But at first, there's so much we take for granted. And whether it's the UK and Australia, the way British people and Australian people communicate in business is completely different. So, you know, it's a matter of learning all of that.
What about how your food travels then? Because obviously you found it easy to travel, to relocate as needs be. Whether we go back again to sort of Bill's and the Bill's model, and that was something that seemed to export well. Why was that? Is there a simplicity of purpose almost behind it? Is there a purity of idea that means that works? What is it about? How do you explain the success?
How do I explain that it works? Yeah, because I mean, it does. We work, the food works in, you know, Japan and Korea and Hawaii and the UK and Australia. And I think, I don't know, someone said to me, one of my people working with me in Japan, that he thinks it's interesting being Australian, that it appeals to palates in Asia and I think also in the UK, because my background is, you know, Anglo-Australian. So my family, I grew up on English food, roast dinners and, you know,
good,
very
good hearty
fare. Hearty food, exactly. Yeah. Really good in 40 degrees
cold
Australian
weather,
sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, scones, you know, really basic British food. Then the whole, in the 70s and 80s in Australia, there was an explosion of Italian influences, Greek influences, Chinese, Thai influences. And that's hit me really young in my teenage years. And I think in Australia, because we didn't have an indigenous food culture, so to speak, we've taken in lots to create our own. That appeals to a lot of different palates. And I think that's probably why. So my palate is quite global in a very natural way. I don't feel Japanese food or Greek food is foreign. I feel like it's food that's all totally appropriate in Australia. And because I do comfort food, I'm as comfortable with pancakes or scrambled eggs for breakfast as I am with fried rice for breakfast.
So it's interesting you use that phrase comfort food, Danny. Do you think that the genre is more important than the place? Well, you wouldn't say that you do, you know, Australian food then. Is it global cuisine?
I think it is global. I mean, you try and describe Australian food. I think Australian food definitely has a freshness and a liveliness on the palate more so than anywhere. You know, maybe the close thing would be California, Southern Californian food, whether it be, you know, San Francisco or LA-based, that kind of thing. But it does have a freshness, and we also have a lack of rules because we're not, it's all right to do different things. We don't have a tradition like Italy where you've got to be really careful about what you're doing. Customers will eat anything.
Hmm. Tell me a bit more then. I mean, you've mentioned a few places. It's in the sort of global perspective that you have. Where do you find your food inspiration then? And you mentioned, you know, you don't want to mess with classics. And
yeah.
people know bills for particular breakfast staples that they love. And there's probably be an absolute uproar if you change anything. But presumably you do need to freshen up your mental palate, if you like. Did you just find things wherever you go? Or are there places where you think, oh, I'm really looking forward to my trip to the West Coast US or wherever it might be?
Look, you know, where I get inspired with food's mixed up a bit. Like, I love the food in Hawaii because you've got a total fusion of, you know, Japanese with, you know, junky American all coming together. I love the food in Singapore because you get this great, you know, the great mix of Indian and Chinese and, you know, Nonya all, you know, together and, you know, in a very natural mix. So I, you know, in LA, I love the mix with Mexican, you know, coming through. So those kind of places I get really excited by because the food always feels very alive and very changing and growing, which I think is really good. So travel is always for me where I get food inspiration, always. Rather than specific, say, going and traveling around, you know, the southwest of France looking for a specific style, I like more modern cities where things are getting, yeah, thrown around a bit with a great restaurant scene.
Well, I was going to ask you about city food scenes because people often talk about, oh, you know, the place you need to be is, oh, you know, have you been to the latest eatery in San Sebastian and had the food from the Basque Country, whatever it might be. Can that sometimes be almost an unhelpful narrative though? Because it sort of points people in a certain direction when, of course, you can find great food and sometimes terrible food pretty much wherever you go.
Well, I think you can. You've got to look for the clues. I mean, I love travelling and finding it. I've sort of given up a little bit looking at guidebooks and blogs and reading of that because I find the sense of adventure a lot more fun. You can do a quick call, but actually just walking around and looking at things and asking, you know, if you find somewhere great for restaurants, saying, oh, where do you eat or what's open? In San Francisco, I went to a great, you know, new vegan restaurant. It was just from a waiter in somewhere told us to go and it just opened. So I think it's good to ask, you know, ask in a clothing shop, you know, where can you get a good coffee? All of those, yeah, and I think that's part of the thing of travelling, that sense of discovery. And that's why I don't like doing too much research myself, because I like feeling like I found something myself rather than just being a next person following someone else. And maybe that's an arrogance, but it's the fun. I think it's the joy of eating out and travelling. I mean, food for me, travel is so tied up so much with food. I love finding a great place.
And do you think, is it harder, I guess, just to look at the idea of discovering things, is it harder to discover new things now because everyone says, you know, oh, look, the world has shrunk, you can't be the first person to find X, Y and Z. Is that a shame, or do you think that you can, you just need to be open-minded enough?
You've got to be open-minded. I think it's hard to get the latest and greatest, and I don't think you want to get too caught up. I remember in Paris years ago with Natalie and I were walking around and we're walking through the Marais, and Natalie said, oh, that place looks quite nice. It's got, you know, nice clean windows, which is always a good sign for the restaurant world. If they've got clean windows, someone really cares about the place. That's a good start. And we made a booking for dinner and went back, and we, you know, went back at 9 o'clock and went in, and we walked in the bar, and there was Goldie Hawn saying, having a drink. And it was just very simple steak and potatoes. And we loved it. We thought we'd just, you know, stumbled onto this amazing place. But then, of course, the next day I did a quick search and I think Anthony Bourdain had done a TV show on it. So
he's been everywhere.
I know. So I think it's hard to be the latest. But I think you could always find, yeah, I mean, what I get inspired by, what I love in restaurants is passion. I love people who are, you know, staff that are happy and engaged, that smile. I love people that are really passionate about what they're doing, whether it be clean windows, fresh flowers, you know, whether someone really cares. I look for those clues where someone really cares about it. And it doesn't have to be smart or overly expensive or fancy. It's often not the case. But it's just that passion you want.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about this because, and it's interesting what you said, I think you've mentioned a couple of the things. How quickly do you know when you're going to have a great meal somewhere? Did you literally see the window, you know, the windows look like you could eat off them? Is it that quick? Is it just one thing? Is it a glint in someone's eye, the warmth of the welcome? How do you know, right,
you
this is
going to
be good?
You know, you start. So you start, like I go in, if I want to check out a place, so I'm walking, passing, that looks interesting. So you'll go in and ask for a business card. And you can often get a lot from that, just by the attitude of the person. You can see if it's really clean, if it's sparkling, so you can get into the place to see if it's going to be any good. I have, my wife is worse because she always thinks, why would you eat a bad meal? It's a waste. So I have been in a restaurant, the entrees come, we haven't eaten it, and actually...
Oh, wow, you've been like up sticks.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry, yeah. Because if you're travelling, you've only got a certain amount of meals, you don't want to waste one.
What about the flip side of that then, Bill? If you've got a, I don't know, I mean, I can't imagine this ever happens, but let's say you had an unhappy diner for whatever reason. How do you deal with that? Because you mentioned that, you know, because the customer's
happen.
Always right, this kind of thing, but there must have been times when you thought, hold tight, what on earth are you talking about? This is absolutely great. What's the approach? Are you a bit of a diplomat? How do you play it?
It's hard, and we serve, you know, thousands and thousands of people a week. So you just got to buy. I remember someone in the restaurant business telling me that years ago, you are just by the law of averages. You know, and the restaurant business is people business. So many things can go wrong, from, you know, the kitchen hand might be having a bad day, the waiter's had a fight with their girlfriend, the chef's, you know, slept in or got drunk the night before. There's a lot of, you know.
Surely, drunken chef, I don't believe that's ever happened.
Never. But you do get those things because it's a people business. And restaurants, you know, do attract, you know, we're all a bit sort of lively and, you know, individuals and in personalities. We're not very straightforward people. So things can go wrong. I think it's, I always tell everyone, accepting that you've made a mistake. And even if you don't feel like it's a mistake, accepting that the person isn't happy with the experience they had is really, really important. I think being humble and accepting that. And it's hard in busy restaurants. What I spend a lot of time doing is telling the guys in the restaurant not to, almost that classic thing of believing your own PR, or because you're busy, you don't need to try, or it's the customers. If other people are happy, they should be happy. Because I think often when you're not happy in a restaurant, it's about feeling like you're not heard or cared for. For me, that's the worst feeling when you go to a place where you feel they don't care, whether they ignore you at the door, or, you know, they come and take your order, or they just put it down and don't engage with you. I think that's the things in restaurants that turn you around. So it's always trying to, I think in the restaurant world, if you're having a hard time, politely sort of bring it to a waiter's attention or say, look, I'm not really happy with it. I hate to complain. And most or good places will really want to fix it because they're proud of what they do and they want to make you happy.
And you still feel like you can learn new things, whether it's from the observation of a diner or a food critic or whatever.
Absolutely.
It's not a closed shop. You don't think, well, look, I've been doing this for years. I know the ins
and outs. No. You can always look. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, they may not be understanding what you're trying to do, and that's fine. You know, it might be a taste thing. It might be what they don't like. You know, I've had people write about a restaurant interior they hated, another person saying it's the most beautiful thing they've ever seen. So, you know, you can't please everyone. I think that's what we're all different as humans, and not one restaurant can make everyone happy. But I think you can always learn a lot, and you should look. And always looking, it's like any work. You want to make a better job. Do a better job all the time.
Bill, a lot of what you talk about is about people, and you've talked about your relationships with your staff and trying to ensure as best you can that they share your vision about food and about service, about delivering a warm welcome. Is recruiting good people difficult, or do you find it's quite easy? Do you find that you tend to just attract, you know, like-minded individuals? What's that process
like?
It's
the hardest part of what we do, is getting the right people, because it's hard work. The nature of the restaurant business too is people can often be doing it for a period of time. It may not be their whole career. It might be a transitionary time while they're studying, in between they're finishing studying and finding something else. Yeah, so it takes a while to get the right people, and it's hard. And sometimes, you know, when the managers in the restaurant are busy, they'll just employ people without taking the time. And I think getting the right people for any business and spending your time recruiting well is really, really important. Because, you know, for some people, you may not be the right business to go and work for because you have a different mindset and different group of people. So I think getting that right mix with the people that are working for you and the place you are, and understanding that, is really, really important.
But I've got a few little kind of quick fire questions, if you can imagine. Imagine this is like a buffet at the side and you're just grabbing things left and right. What about an evocative dish for you? Can be one of your own, can be one of somebody else's. Something that always just takes you, I don't know, to a particular place, to a moment, or to a particular person. There might be a few. I don't know.
Banana out? Pancakes, which we do the ricotta hotcakes with banana, always take me back to a beach in Thailand when I was about 20 and backpacking to Koh Phangan. You'd have banana pancakes on the beach after, you know, you'd go out all night and you'd have banana pancakes, and it was great. It's that great thing when you have, you know, that gap year thing, no responsibilities. and the world's opening up for you. So that always takes me back. Sashimi, I'm obsessed with, you know, good sushi or sashimi. I absolutely love, because I love its sensual pleasure. I love the fact that it's raw, that there's really nothing to it. And you can taste the craft of the chef. Yeah, just the way they cut the fish, I think it's incredible.
So that's a kind of a less is more.
Oh, absolutely. Again, I mean, there's no cooking. There's no really ingredients, apart from if you want to have a little bit of soy. But it's just about precision, texture, and, yeah, pure simplicity. Nothing. Mm. Yeah, there's nothing to it.
What makes you angry in a restaurant? I guess we've touched upon this a little bit already.
Angry, I think, where you don't feel like you're being loved as a customer. I think that's the most important thing in a restaurant, that you feel loved as a customer. And when you don't feel that, that makes me cross.
I've got Desert Island Dish here. See what I've done there.
Okay.
This is always difficult for a lover of food, because I don't know, the thought of this just makes me worry. But what would it be if you could only have one thing? I gather you can survive purely on avocados, for example. but if you didn't have to worry about survival, what is there one thing you just think, I could not live without?
Could not live without? Oh, lemons. Anything with lemons. Because I think if I'm on an island and I can catch fish, I can pick it of vegetables, I can steam it, I can put a bit of lemon juice on it, and I'm happy.
So you're thinking happy. Like a... Well, that thinking sounds like cool. You're thinking like a chef, if I'm going to say.
Yes.
Now, you must have been asked this before, but I'm not going to let that stand in the way. My last meal, you know, it's a feature actually we do here at Monocle in the magazine. Where would you go? I mean, would it be, again, back to that Thai beach and those banana fritters?
Thai beach.
Or where would you like to go?
Oh, where would I like to go for my last meal? Oh, I do love the River Cafe in London, because I love the fact that it's an old restaurant, which I love old restaurants have been, you know, institutions, been around about 25 years, I think. The fact that it's always evolving, always fresh. The fact that the team of people are passionate about what they're doing, the ingredients are always best. And it doesn't feel like a restaurant. It feels like you're eating at someone's house, which for me is the greatest, hardest thing to achieve. If I could, in the restaurants, put out the food that I cook at home, I'd be happy. It's a really hard thing to do simple food in a professional way.
That sounds good. Fast car to the River Cafe right
yes.
now.
Well, hang on a second. Shining.
I've got a couple more questions. I don't know, you may have already done this. Who would you most like to cook for then, following up on that? Presumably then it would be, what, in your house maybe? Or I don't
know.
Where,
in my where, house. Who would I like
Who would
most...
it be for and where would it be?
Where would it be? I think it would have to be a barbecue, because I am Australian and I do like cooking outdoors.
Good.
Yeah, it's right at the River Cafe. There's a garden there. So it would have to be a barbecue. And who would it be?
It's a tricky question.
It's a really tricky question. I'm just trying to think of the people that have inspired me. It would be people like all my favourite cooks. So people like Claudia Rodan, you know, Ruth from the River Cafe, Sally Clark's another one, Chrissy Mansfield from Sydney. All my favourite cooks, and they're often women as well. All my favourite writers, Marcella Hazan, Italy. All those people that have inspired me. I'd like to give a bit of my time back and what I've learned to them.
What a chow down that would be.
Yes, a lot of fun.
That would be a great day. The final one of the quickfire questions, Bill. And this doesn't necessarily have to be a food answer, I guess. What really makes you content? Is it about the old cliche of work-life balance? Is it about spending quality time? What is it that you're doing when you really feel like, yep, I'm happy?
I'm happy when I'm barefoot, somewhere warm, and cooking. That makes me really happy.
Sounds good.
I know, yeah. I know. The windows are open, the sun's out. I'm washing fresh tomatoes by the sink. That makes me feel totally content. It's what I want to be doing.
That sounds pretty nice, yeah. Bill. Let me ask you about the industry. If we take a step or two back, people often talk, and when we speak to other chefs and cooks, and they talk about how the food business is changing. Often people say things like, I'm not sure I would be able to get away with that now, or I'm not sure I would be able to get the start that I got in my career these days. Do you think the industry's changed in that way? Is it now more difficult? Are there other barriers to entry?
Think,
or do you think, are you still confident that there are other, I don't know, other Bill Grangers out there who can still make it?
It's actually easier now in a way for young people to really get a voice and be heard. You know, when I was starting out, I was very lucky. I borrowed some money from my grandfather. It was $20,000 and did a small cafe. But now with social media, with Instagram, people can really create their own voice and get out there in a way, you know, with food trucks, with pop-ups. I think you can get started if you've got a passion, you know, food specifically. You know, I see some great things out there, and they're from people who aren't necessarily professionals that are doing amazing food. And I think that's quite exciting and quite interesting. And I think the world of food is full of so much creativity now. And it's because of these young, untrained people are coming in and doing great, exciting things. And they're not necessarily coming through the system. So there's a lot more people that are, you know, we're all foodies. Everyone, we've all got to eat and we all love food. But I think that's what's quite exciting now. you don't necessarily need to start up and open a restaurant. You know, you can start a... Because the world of food is not just about owning a restaurant or cooking. There's a lot of things you can do with it. And I think it's quite exciting now.
Now, it's interesting, in the sort of journalistic field, a lot of people talk about, well, you know, it's great that it's very democratic now. There's citizen journalism. Anyone who wants to write can write. But then some people say, well, yeah, the flip side of that is maybe you don't get schooled by great editors. So maybe you don't get to hone your craft. Do you ever worry that the fact that these things are very instant, you know, you can post pictures and all this kind of thing. Does part of you think, well, I don't know, it might be better if people did have, you know, someone that they studied under or a chef that they can work with to perfect their art? Are people maybe becoming a bit impatient and they want to be a star straight away?
Yeah, there is that impatience. But, you know, when I was, I remember thinking when I was about 25, I wish I had have worked in other people's restaurants. And I thought of people, you know, the great Australian chef, Neil Perry, or I wish I'd had have worked in other places. But then I realised actually working with other people and working collaboratively, you learn so much and you're always learning. And I think that's the important thing to do, is to always learn. It might not be in the traditional apprenticeship style and people might be more impatient now. But I think as long as you're always learning, it's fine. And you keep on changing. That's the most important thing. You don't get stuck. You just keep on learning. And I'm always learning. Even now, I'm still learning.
Bill, what are you looking forward to most then? Obviously, we've talked about Bill's, the chain. You've got the restaurants, of course, here, Granger & Co. in the UK. Is what excites you the possibilities of what might be next and where in the world it might take you? Or is it about, you know, staying true to the sorts of principles you've been talking about and making sure that, you know, if anyone ever comes to a Bill Granger place, they're going to get a warm
welcome?
Yeah,
well, there's 14 restaurants now, which is pretty amazing. I can't believe it's quite happened. But
not bad for a lazy cook.
Yeah, it's not bad for a lazy cook. No, it's a tribute to a lot of very hardworking people I work with. I'm looking forward. We're opening a new restaurant in Japan in Fukuoka in July, and I'm really, really excited. It's our first outside of Tokyo, and then one in Ginza, which we're having a lot of fun with. I'm sort of being a little bit more of a grown-up, Bills. A little bit more sophisticated being in the Ginza. It's got to be quite smart. So I'm just enjoying developing and thinking about the restaurants and what we do and, you know, with the menus. I've been cooking today, developing new menus. And I still just get excited about that.
What was the big discovery today, Bill? Can you reveal anything?
No, I was doing a really good... We're playing with different breads, you know, because, you know, there's so much exciting, you know, new flours out there now. You know, when I was baking 25 years ago, it was white flour and sugar. And that was it. You started, everything came from that. Whereas now there's incredible flours, nuts and seeds you can put in things. So, yeah, just making some great breads, actually, which has been quite exciting. But it's that, cooking new food and working, you know, with great architects, because I'm still passionate about design and the environments and interiors. I get so excited by that, by creating new restaurants that, yeah, have a lot of longevity and can last.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to hearing more about them.
Thank you.
Maybe to visiting them if we're yes, lucky enough, yeah. Bill. It's been really wonderful to speak to you, Bill. Thanks for coming to talk to us on The Big Interview. You've been listening to The Big Interview with me, Tom Edwards, in conversation with Bill Granger. The show is produced by Bill Luty, researched by Gaia Lutz and Charlie Young, and edited by Nina Norek. Don't forget to check out the previous episodes of The Big Interview, if you haven't already. I'm sure you must have done. There's loads of them to listen to at our site, on iTunes, or on your preferred platform. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you very much for listening.